I believe that we are all perfectly equipped to fulfill our purpose. So if I can connect to my purpose, then I can also connect to my, you know, skills and talents and potential to actually fulfill that purpose.
Welcome to a new episode of the Grasshopper Podcast. Today I have as my guest Carolyn Zeitler. Did I say it right?
Zeitler.
Carolyn is a serial entrepreneur, a business coach, and also an activist. And we met a couple of weeks ago around the Do Something Good conference. And last week Carolyn gave a workshop at Sanya, which I attended. And I was very inspired by the workshop. I've been, you know, in business for a few years now and had quite a lot of these kind of content and presentations, and I think you delivered it really well.
Thank you.
And yeah, I told you already, it made me change some things in the way I look at how I'm working. So I really felt that this is a message that other people can benefit from, not just people who are entrepreneurs and startups, but actually anyone. I was telling quite a few of the team who work here your definition of strengths. And I just realized this would be such a good exercise to do even with the team here, just to help them recognize what they should be spending their time doing. So I think that would be something nice we can get into for those people who missed the first workshop, just share some of the takeaways from that. And we are doing a few more workshops leading up to a retreat in July.
Yep.
So we can share some of the ideas that you'll be sharing in the next workshops as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do that.
Awesome. So, Carolyn, maybe we can just start, you know, I introduced you as a serial entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Maybe you can share a little bit of your experiences with entrepreneurship and the things that have really sort of formed your life and your perspective when you're coaching others.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I started out, my first business was, I called it communication coaching. So because I used to live in the Middle East in Qatar, and when I was working there, I realized that there was really a lack of communication, as in most places, actually.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as you said that.
But, you know, there, I think it was very pronounced because you usually have so many different nationalities working together. So in a typical team, in a typical company in Qatar, you have maybe 30, 40 different nationalities all working together. So obviously that adds an extra layer of complexity to any kind of communication that you have in the company. So I just wanted to find a way, and I proceeded to develop a way that people can communicate with each other that is independent of cultural background. Because, you know, in cultures, we have kind of silent agreements about communication. So one example is in some cultures, the listener is sort of responsible for the understanding. So if I'm speaking to you and you don't understand what I'm saying, it's your responsibility to ask. And in other cultures, it's the speaker's responsibility to check that the listener actually understands what the speaker is saying. So you could see how, you know, if the wrong two cultures meet each other, nobody would be checking and there might not be any understanding, you know. And this is just one small example. You know, there are so many of these tacit agreements that we have in cultures, and when we communicate with cultures that are quite different from our own, we don't realize what their tacit agreements are. So I wanted to, so the way that I have now devised over the years is a way of communicating where it is independent of these tacit agreements. It will always work. It doesn't matter who is opposite of me. And this has become something I'm very passionate about, because maybe I can just take one step back, you know, like for me, all my work, no matter what I do, because sometimes people say to me, you do so many different things, like how do they all fit together? But for me, there is a really like one thread that runs through everything, which is connection. Now, my work for me is all about connection, but real human connection. I think we have the illusion of connection a lot of the time these days, because we feel that we're connected via social media or, you know, whatever. But it's not a real connection. And we crave, as humans, we crave real connection. You know, we need that real human to human connection. And we need a real connection with ourselves, with our deeper inner self, you know, maybe what you would call your core or your authentic self. And we also need a connection with something higher than us, whatever we want to call it. You know, I don't care if people call it God or Allah or the universe or whatever, you know, Earth Mother or whatever you want to call it. You know, I think it all amounts to the same thing. You know, we need this bigger love, this bigger, higher power,
purpose.
You know, that kind of binds us together, and that also gives us a sense of being looked after in a way, so that we're not just lost souls wandering around on this planet, you know. And this is, for me, everything that I do is about connection, about these three different forms of connection, which again, when I go back more again, is for me all the same, you know, because I connect. If I connect to myself, my true self, or another person truly, or the, you know, the higher, it's all the same really, you know, at the end of the day. So that for me is like the core of everything I do. And helping people communicate is one thing, one way of doing that, helping people express themselves. I've even taught languages before, you know, like taught English. But again, for me, that's a way of helping people to connect, because if I can express myself better in a language, I can connect to someone, you know. So for me, this is everything I do has this ultimate purpose of helping people connect.
It's really super interesting. I'm very passionate about connection as well, and I really try within my businesses to help the people within them have authentic connections to these three, big three. I think it's something I think about a lot, because it's really funny how it's so important to our lives, yet in a sense we've really lost the skill. I teach yoga and meditation, as you know, and I can often see people who come into the class and it's like they've lost that connection with their own body.
Yeah.
And it's so strange, because, you know, how can we live without even being connected to ourselves?
Mm.
And how can we collaborate, work together and achieve things if that fundamental building block is out?
Yeah.
Yet for most people it is.
Mm.
I think one thing which, you know, I'd love your take on is how a lot of people hear that and will think like, oh, this is spirituality, this is, you know, what is this? but really, sort of, it is so fundamental to who we are. And whether you're spiritual or not, you kind of need to get that self-connection first. And how do you help people, you know, if they haven't even accepted that they need to do it?
Well, my approach is to talk to people about fear and love, because those are things that I think everyone can identify with and understand, you know. And ultimately, that's what it comes down to, you know. Either I follow the route of fear, and then I will be disconnected, because fear always disconnects us, you know. And then I'll be worrying and putting myself down and, you know, doing all those kind of things. Or I follow the route of love, and then I will be in the connection. You know, I will be going into connections. I will be experiencing more joy. But I'll also feel often like I need to take risks, because, you know, to connect to another person is a risky business. I mean, it's not really, but it feels like it, you know.
Even to connect to ourselves, because, yeah, of course, you know, there are I see this within yoga, some people who are not used to connecting with themselves, and me myself, I wasn't used to it until I started practicing. And then of course it's kind of like domino effect, you know.
Yeah.
You start to feel into yourself and suddenly you feel all of these things that you were kind of pushing aside, and it can be a bit overwhelming.
Yeah, it's true. But you know what I found, and what I try to convey to other people, is that the fear of it or the worry about things is usually a lot worse than just letting myself drop into it. Now, so my fear of feeling sadness, for example, when I've lost someone, or, you know, I don't know, I've gone through a separation or whatever might cause the sadness, you know, my fear of feeling the sadness is actually much more strenuous, much more energy consuming than if I just sit with the sadness and just let it come up and let it happen. And if I allow myself to just sit with the sadness, then after a while it goes.
Yeah. No? Actually quite quickly.
Yeah.
I've had that experience with myself, you know, been resisting something for months, and then suddenly I just, you know, surrender to it, and within 5 minutes it's gone. I was like, oh my God, what a time wasted.
Exactly, you know. So, and that's another thing, that I wasted a lot of my time in my life trying to understand things, trying to understand why it is as it is, you know. And now I just think, well, that's just how it is. And if I can just sit with it and let it be, and then let it go when it's ready to go, then it's really easy. And I don't need to understand, like, a lot of the time, I don't need to understand why I'm sad. I don't need to understand why I'm frustrated. It's just allowing it to be there, giving it some space, letting it go, and I feel better.
Yeah. I think people are getting more aware about how in a workplace, it's almost these issues which are the biggest barriers to being productive. You know, before it was like, we need to educate people more, we need to give them more technology, but it's kind of like, our human nature has now become the bottleneck of productivity.
Mm.
And we're only as productive as we are enlightened, in a sense. Which
it's,
I think,
true.
Is beautiful. You know, so you have people like the CEO of LinkedIn talking about compassionate leadership and mindfulness and these kind of concepts. And it's great that kind of the business world is now going to start pushing us as individuals to actually become better humans.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great advantage of the knowledge economy. I think it's there are several factors, but I think two big factors for that happening is that the millennials are coming into the workforce more and more strongly, and that we're moving into more and more of the knowledge economy. Because in the knowledge economy, I need people to be creative. And if I need someone to be creative, they have to have a good atmosphere to work in, because I can't be creative if I'm feeling stressed and pressured. And
you're saying this is obviously like non-creative jobs are more being done by machines nowadays.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know what, as you know, the more menial labor is being taken over more and more by machines and computers and whatever, we are being left to do more and more creative work, more design related work, more also caring work, you know, because computers and machines can't do that. They can't care for this. We have to care for others. So all of these, this whole trend is pushing us to be more in connection with each other, and to improve on the soft skills.
Yeah.
It's very important for this economy to work.
Yeah.
And I think the millennials, as much as they're being criticized for all kinds of things, you know, I can't even start. I don't even want to start. But I think one thing that is really amazing about millennials is that they really care. They do care, you know, and this caring is coming out, you know, more and more in the work environment also, that companies have to have a purpose. More and more companies are being pushed to have a purpose, to have a corporate social responsibility, you know, to create a good work environment for people, because the younger generation just doesn't accept it anymore. They don't accept that that's just not how it is.
Yeah.
You know? What we still accepted a lot of the time, my generation, I mean, I'm 42 now, so my generation just accepted that a lot of the time. People would just say to us, well, that's just how it is. And maybe we weren't happy with it, but a lot of the time we just kind of went along with it because that's how it was, you know. And of course, you know, we have been making changes for a long time and making progress also. But I really like this very strong push of this generation that's saying we're not going to put up with this any longer. They're not just trying to make change. They're just saying, that's it, you know.
Another thing about millennials is that we do seek connection. Even though we're kind of the most technological generation, I think there is a real drive for real connection. You know, we don't like communicating with machines. You know, our generation is the generation that hates kind of the you know, calling a company and getting a robot. And I think even just the whole drive to yoga and meditation and mindfulness by the millennial generation just kind of shows that even though we might not have the connection necessarily, we're definitely seeking it and trying to bring it more into our lives.
I see that. Absolutely.
yes. It's actually really funny because this podcast, you know, I never really set out to talk about your spirituality or the bigger picture, but it does seem to be a theme into this. I guess it's the guests that I get attracted to. And since we're on the subject of connection, maybe it would be nice to talk about your experiences in Qatar, because you were talking a little bit before we started about the conferences you were organizing and getting people from different groups to connect. And I think that's kind of the ultimate in connection, is connecting with people that we're scared to connect to. So you can just share a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think it came from early on. You know, my parents always traveled a lot with us, and my mother is a very open-minded person, and she would always say to us, you know, like, look beyond the surface and see what, you know, see what's behind the surface. So I've always felt like I could connect with pretty much anyone, you know, independent of like skin color or culture or whatever. I could always find a way to connect with people. And it became increasingly more important to me when I realized that there was almost like a gulf, you know, between the Muslim women and the expat women in Qatar. There was very little connection, very little interaction, and they seemed quite estranged in many ways, you know. And I met so many of the Muslim women there, because my first job there, I was working in education, so I had a lot of parent conferences, you know, like, and so I would meet the mothers of the children that were coming to us. And so I got a very good impression, and I was very, very impressed with these women. They were, you know, very educated, very caring, very open-minded, so different from the image that we have, you know, of Muslim women. And I really wanted more people to see this, because these women are, I mean, I met so many women who have a job and their own business and five children, and they manage it all. You know, of course they have help at home, of course they have employees. But, you know, it is very impressive that they manage to share their time between all these demands and really meet all of the demands. And I thought it was so different from what people think. And also the way that the men were acting towards the women was so different from the impression that we have, you know. Of course, there are still some horrible laws in place, you know, that women need permission from a male relative to travel and, you know, things like that. It's those things still exist, and it's wrong. You know, I worked very hard to try and change some of these things. But also, there is another reality, you know, and that for me is another aspect of connection, is that often it's not either or, but and, you know. So it's not, either there is all this sort of oppressive aspect or we're completely free, you know, it's an end. You know, there is an aspect in which the women there are repressed or oppressed, and there is another aspect where they're very free and they have a lot of ambitions and aspirations. And so I started this women's empowerment initiative. It was more out of a necessity, really, like so many businesses have started, because there was nothing there for professional women. There was only one association, and that only allowed Qatari women to participate, or women who had lived there for at least 10 years already and were running a business, trading, actually, you know. So it was very limited who could participate. I wanted something that was a more open platform that would allow more women to be part of it. So I started a small group first that was called These Ladies Mean Business. And we would meet and just exchange, you know, exchange about our business ideas, exchange, give each other feedback on ideas that we had, on presentations that we had to give, or, you know, things like that. And it was amazing because we were a very, very diverse group. Completely different women, you know, different ages, different nationalities, like completely different backgrounds. But we could all really identify with each other. And I would hear these stories, you know, from a woman who grew up in the Philippines and another woman who was Palestinian, Jordanian. And, you know, I would hear their stories and I could completely feel with them and identify with them, even though their life on the surface is so different from mine. But their fears, their hopes, their aspirations are so similar that I could completely understand what they were talking about, and I could feel with them, you know, every step along the way. And we all felt like that in this group, and we felt like this was giving us so much, this sense of I'm not alone here, I'm not the only woman here with aspirations and ambitions, you know. Because on the surface, maybe I need to explain this, on the surface, when you come to Qatar, the first impression is that all the women are ladies who lunch, you know, are just like they're accompanying their husband who makes a killing in his job and they don't do anything but, you know, go to lunch and maybe look after the kids a bit, you know. And so that's kind of your first impression when you get there. And if you're not like that, you think, how do I fit in? You know? But then the more I did with this initiative, the more I found out that there were actually lots of women like us who wanted to do something. And the initiative grew because we had such a great experience and we thought we should make this available to a lot more people. And so the first thing to do was to start a conference, an annual conference that would give women a platform to get together and to network, to get to know each other, to support each other in different ways, you know, to exchange their experiences. And for me, my sort of secret aim was also to break down the barriers between the different cultures, because there was so many, there was so much prejudice and so much stereotyping, you know, between the different women. Like, people would say things about the Indian women or the Muslim women, or, you know, the Western women were all seen to be loose, of course, you know, and it was like this whole thing, you know, all these stereotypes flying around everywhere all the time. And it was amazing how much feedback we actually got after every conference. I did this for 8 years. So I did 7 conferences over that time. And after every conference, we got a lot of feedback from people saying basically they are so much more like us than we thought they were. And it came from everyone, about everyone, you know. So it really didn't matter who was talking and who they were talking about. This experience, it came again and again and again that people were like, wow, we are so much more similar than we are different.
Yeah.
And I found that really, really valuable, you know, to see that, because, you know, our media, especially with the Muslims, you know, our media makes Muslims out to be very strange, very scary people, you know, very different from us. And actually, they're not. No, they may have a few different traditions, and even those are very similar mm-hmm. to what the Catholic, I mean, mm-hmm. strictly Catholic people have very, very similar values mm-hmm. to Muslim people. It's mm-hmm. it's not that far apart, mm-hmm. you know. So I was really seeing that, wow, you know, if you scratch a little bit off the surface, you know, and you find that below the surface, we all are humans.
Yeah.
We all have fears, we all have ambitions, we all want our children to have a better life than we had, you know. We all enjoy a hug from someone we love, yeah. all of these things, you know, they're all just human experiences.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, a topic very relevant to Malta because, you know, we have our own prejudices and issues here. Coincidentally, I actually did my master's thesis on this subject,
okay.
discrimination in Malta. But yeah, I think it's just so interesting that we create, you know, these kind of stereotypes in a way to protect ourselves so that mm. we don't have to get out of our comfort zone and connect with someone. But yet we all want connection and
yeah.
we have to be vulnerable to connect. So it's such a, like, you know, ironic situation that we're facing.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to business, you know, we can be so much more creative and productive if we break down these barriers.
Yeah.
Because just like you're saying, you know, obviously in this case, it's a very palpable boundary. But we face this every day, you know, with
yeah.
people of the same religion and the same skin color. We still create these boundaries and,
yeah.
and stereotypes.
Yeah, because culture is not only a question of religion or nationality, you know. Every family has its own culture. So even if I meet someone from another family, they can feel like they're coming from another culture,
yeah.
so to speak,
yeah.
you know. So it's something that's relevant all
yeah.
the time, you know.
In fact, in Maltese, the word for, like, if you want to call someone who's from another village, the word is foreigner.
Okay.
So even between villages, we refer to each other as foreigners.
Uh-huh.
That's very telling. So you were talking about sort of connection as being
mm-hmm.
the main thread of your work.
Yeah.
Maybe this would be a good time to kind of go into more detail of what your work looks like, or maybe we can
yeah.
go into what we discussed in that first workshop. I don't know if you want to share more before we
yeah.
start talking about the workshop.
Now let's talk about the workshop, because I think it tells a lot about, you know,
yeah.
how I work. Because my firm belief is that every person has a lot of potential inside of them. And every person basically is a good person, you know. So I think that there is this, that at the core, you know, every person is lovable and every person has a lot of potential and talent. And sometimes that gets really lost. In some people, it's very close to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So these are people that are easy to connect to and, you know, they're like approachable.
Levels.
Yes, they're approachable. They have higher confidence levels. They may be more successful in life also. And in other people, this is very buried, you know. It's just like there's a lot of layers on top of that that have been created throughout life from different difficult experiences that
yeah.
they've had, you know. But I don't believe that there is such a thing as a mean person. No, I don't believe, because I've never met anyone. Everyone that I meet, no matter how mean they might seem on the surface, if you spend enough time talking to them and discovering more about them, they are actually just as lovable and just as talented as everyone else.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of making the effort to get there, you know,
yeah,
to discover that. Yeah, exactly. And so this approach, what we were talking about in the workshop, is like discovering your strength, discovering the things that energize you, that make you feel strong, because they would help you discover the lovable side of you. They would help you discover your purpose, your talent, those kind of things, you know. So it's very much connected for me to
mm-hmm.
to this topic. So I try to help people to become aware of what their strengths are. A lot of people are not aware at all of what their strengths are. They might be somewhat aware of what they're good at, which is what a lot of people think of as strength, is like, what am I good at? But you see, the problem with that approach is that then this is defined by other people. Because I'm maybe not the best person to define what I'm good at or not good at. But I'm the best person definitely to define what energizes me and what doesn't energize me. Because nobody else can know that as well as I can, yeah. Right? So this approach of looking at strength as something that makes me feel strong puts the power back on me to define what my strengths are. And because there are many, many examples, if you look around, you will find them everywhere, of something that people are extremely good at, but it really drains them to do it.
And we get stuck doing it because yeah. we're good at it.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean we should be doing it.
But yeah, it's not the best use of your time if it's really draining you. If it's pushing you more and more towards burnout, now then it's not the best thing for you to be doing. Maybe it's better to be doing something that you're maybe not quite as good at. You're still good at it, but not quite as good at, but you love doing it with all your heart. And because you love doing it so much and you start out being good at it already, you will get very, very good at it over time. You know, you will become one of the best in your field over time. But we don't have to start as one of the best in our field. You know, we can start as someone who's good at it, who's got a predisposition, a talent for it, but maybe is not the best yet.
Yeah. I mean, this is just so relevant, obviously, for entrepreneurs, because when you start a business, you have to do a bit of everything.
Yeah.
And obviously the things that you're better at kind of help you save money because you can avoid hiring other people to do that. But at the same time, it's not good for the long-term sustainability of your business.
No.
But obviously entrepreneurs often don't take the time to step out and ask themselves these kind of questions. Mm. I mean, I've never asked myself the questions that you asked me in that workshop. That's a bit worrying.
No, and it's so easy. I mean, even me, even though I know all these things and I've been coaching people in these things, I again and again, you know, find myself like falling into that trap.
Yeah.
And doing stuff because I'm very good at it and nobody else is putting their hand up to do it, you know, and I'm like, okay, well, it has to be done, so I'll be doing it. But that's why a lot of us end up in burnout situations, you know, or near-burnout situation.
Kind of pointing out that you said, you know, you do still need to spend at least 20% of your time doing things like that. So we're saying, you know, only do what? Because obviously, you know, you have to be a bit realistic. But you said kind of an 80-20 ratio to spend 80% of your time doing things.
And this is the long-term goal that you're working towards, So everyone understands that in a startup situation, you know, in your first few months, you just have to do a lot
of
stuff.
Hands on deck.
You know? Well, you just have to do whatever is required, you know. But the problem is that a lot of us, we get stuck in startup mode. And 6 years down the line, we find ourselves still working in startup mode, you know. And you cannot sustain that model for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Now, at some point, you need to switch and you need to see like, okay, so what are the things that I want to be doing? And what are the things that I need to find other people for? And how can I find other people that complement me? You see, because let me give you an example. Like when I was doing the women's empowerment stuff, we organized very big events for like 2-day conference with 300 people with 60 speakers because we had like lots and lots of breakout sessions happening in parallel. So we needed a lot of different speakers. So you can imagine the organizational effort that that takes. You know, it would actually take us about 6 months to organize the whole thing from start to finish, you know. And I couldn't do it all myself, obviously. And I very soon discovered that I'm not very good at handling volunteers or the people who do the small stuff directly. Because it needs a lot of interaction, a lot of hand-holding, a lot of telling people what exactly is expected of them, and checking in with them and seeing where they're at. And I don't have the patience for all that. You know, like, I'm a big picture person, you know. I want to get that vision, you know, done and installed and implemented, you know. So I needed to find a coordinator, you know. I needed to have someone whose sole job was to just coordinate the team. That was their only job. They didn't do any actual work on the conference. Their only job was to coordinate all the volunteers. And that helped me so much, because that way I had one person who could translate my big picture thinking into detail stuff, you know, yeah, and give it to the volunteers broken down, mm-hmm, into detail. And then the volunteers had a very concrete project that they were working on. So it was very satisfying for them, because they weren't just someone who was doing something to help. They were the person responsible for X. And if they managed to do X well, then that was like a part of the conference when it all came together, and they could see their achievement, you know, when they came to the event. So it was, that was a way of helping everyone to capitalize on their strength. I could focus more on my big picture thinking and, you know, doing the networking and the fundraising and all the things that I needed to do at that level, you know. The coordinator was someone who was very good at project management and at detail and at, you know, making plans and spreadsheets, which, you know, is something that you can chase me with. But, you know, everyone's different, thank God. Yeah. You know, everyone's different.
Thank God some people like spreadsheets.
Yes, exactly. You know, we need that. It's really important to have that. So, and then, you know, the volunteers each had something that they felt very passionate about, and they could work on that. They could work on their little project that was something that they felt strongly about and that they enjoyed working on. So that kind of is what I mean by it, you know. It doesn't mean that I didn't have to do things that I didn't like doing. I mean, fundraising, for example, was never my favorite thing to do. I still needed to do it. But there are things where you can find someone else, and you can find someone who enjoys doing what you don't want to do. So it's not like, you know, dumping it on someone. It's actually finding a synergy with someone, and that way everyone benefits.
Yeah. And again, you know, it's like a percentage, you know, that you're working towards, you know, spending at least the majority of your time.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, you know, kind of those things. I mean, I was thinking about this for myself in the workshop, and coincidentally, you know, what I get strengthened by is actually the things that are good for my business.
Yeah.
So usually you do end up being in a situation where your business can benefit from what your strength is. If not, you're in the wrong business. Start a new business.
Yeah. No, definitely. And you know, this work is based very much on Marcus Buckingham's work, you know. So I really admire his writings and everything. So I've learned a lot from that. And what Marcus Buckingham says is that nobody ends up in the perfect job or with the perfect business by chance, you know. People build this position or this business over years and years and years by consistently focusing on getting more of their strength, more, you know, as part of their role. So you might start out with doing only 20% of what makes you feel strong, you know, and you have to do 80% of what you don't really like.
Yeah.
But if you consistently work on it week after week after week, you know, then you can expand that and slowly but surely arrive in the place where it's mostly what you want to be doing.
Yeah. And in a sense, this is kind of a new idea itself, you know, that our businesses can serve our lives as much as we have to serve our business. I remember I met someone in London who runs a cafe, and I was sharing with him my experiences. I was saying everything with tired catering, everything with burnt out, and he just kind of looked at me and said, well, if you're not well, then you shouldn't be in the wellness industry.
Yeah.
And he was just kind of sharing, you know, that our businesses have to support our values and the way that we want to live our lives and the kind of people that we want to be.
Yeah.
But it's something that you do have to kind of keep taking note of and coming back to. You can't just take it for granted. I mean, those words never left my head. I keep coming back to questioning, like, okay, am I well? You know, because if I'm going to be doing this and sharing wellness with other people, and if I'm not there, then this is all, you know, a bit of a joke.
Yeah, it's like the hairdresser with the bad haircut.
Yeah, exactly. But I think this might be a nice thing to just talk a little bit about mentorship, because you mentioned, you know, you yourself, you know, you do so much coaching, even you can easily forget, you know, some of these principles. And I think most entrepreneurs, especially the more successful ones, they always talk about mentorship as one of the top things that you need to succeed. And I think we're living in a time where there's a lot of information online. So in a sense, you have this kind of false mentorship where you can go watch a YouTube video, learn how to do this, that, or the other. But I think, you know, one of the reasons I was so inspired by your work and the workshops you're doing at Sanya is because you're teaching the inner skills, which you can't get from a YouTube video. And you need a kind of person in front of you who can help you interpret your emotions and your vision. At the same time, you know, I don't want to like group all millennials, but like my generation, we do have a bit of a thing of like, you're your own guru kind of mentality, that like,
don't follow the guru.
Exactly. We're kind of like, follow your own feelings.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes our feelings can also really misguide us. So then maybe you just want to comment on that.
Well, I think, again, it's an and situation, you know, it's not a question of either you follow the guru or you are your own guru, you know, it's an and situation. You know, I myself have never subscribed to any particular guru, you know, but I have always learned widely from all religions, all philosophies, you know, I've always like sort of picked out the bits that I found really useful. And I think it's really important, you know, to read and watch and listen widely. But then it's equally important to always check back, like, how is this relevant to me? And does this kind of fit with what I feel and what I know already? Does this, I don't know, resonate with my experience, you know? So from this, you know, you kind of develop your own set of values, your own set of truth, if you will. And that can help you grow consistently. And they might change a little over time. I found that, you know, you do sometimes, you know, you come to a stage in your life where you're like, okay, this thing doesn't serve me anymore now. This belief doesn't serve me anymore, or this, I don't know, you know, and you need to change something. But I also think that your values, your basic values, probably pretty much stay the same over life. I don't think they change that much, but maybe your interpretation of how that can be lived can change, you know, over life. So that's kind of that part. And then I think mentorship, for me, mentorship and coaching are two different things. But I think mentorship is really, really important because we need people who are like role models in our life. You know, we need someone who's somewhere where we want to be one day in one aspect, you know, in one respect or another. So my rule was always, when I see a person that I find very inspiring in some way or another, I ask them to be my mentor. And sometimes, you know, they're in a completely different business from me. But for example, I met one businessman in Qatar, and he was running his business in such an inspiring way because he knew all his employees. He knew everything that was going on. He was very involved with the business. But he was also going home at 1 o'clock every day because it was really important for him to spend time with his family. And he had mastered the art of delegating work, you know, and still being in touch with his business. Like, he was very clearly in touch and in charge of his business. But at the same time, he had, you know, carved this free time out for himself where he would go home and spend time with his family every afternoon. And I thought, wow, you know, I want to be like that. So I asked him to be my mentor. And with many other people, it was the same. You know, I would see them, sometimes even people who I hadn't met face to face, but I would see them online and I would think, wow, this person really knows something that I need to know.
Yeah.
And I would ask them to be my mentor. And actually, nobody ever said no. You know, some people said, well, I can only do 3 hours or something like that, you know, but at least, you know, they would give me that. So I think being a mentor and having a mentor is both really, really inspiring.
Yeah.
Like we also started a mentoring ring for women in Qatar. And that was also a great experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I went through, I had a few mentees in that. Mm-hmm. And again, they were often from very, very different areas. Like one of them was an airplane engineer. But, you know, she just needed this encouragement. She needed soft skills. So I was a good mentor for her because I could help her with that, you know. And then there's coaching. And coaching is maybe, it's more about discovering yourself, you know. So mentoring is more about learning the resources, learning about the resources that are available, learning about the trade, learning about how to do business, you know, all of these kind of things. But I think coaching is very much about learning about yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's learning how you can get even better at something.
Yeah.
And the coach that you choose doesn't necessarily have to be better at it than you are, because it's a different set of skills, you know. I always compare it to like a professional tennis player. A professional tennis player, their coach doesn't play tennis better than the player.
Yeah.
But their coach.
Yeah.
Their coach is good at seeing what can the player do to be even better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's exactly what a business coach does. You know, I'm not better at running a business than a CEO of a multinational corporate. You know, I don't know anything about that. But they know their job. That's not the problem. But I can see where they can do even better.
Yeah. You know? It's just that thing that, like, it's so hard to see yourself from the outside. You just need someone to kind of be out.
Yeah. And you need someone who has that specific training. You know, it's a specific training that we have as coaches, is to see how to help people improve themselves. And to teach them the tools that they can improve themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, as a coach, my aim, if I'm working with you, is that you don't need me anymore.
Yeah.
Now, my aim is to teach you the tools so that you become your own coach.
Yeah.
And I'm just there along the way for a little while to sort of accelerate a process that would naturally just happen over a longer time.
Yeah.
You know.
Probably save a lot of money on the way.
Exactly. Money. Yeah. So, you know, it's just a way of saving yourself a lot of time and money and hardship, really.
So we've spoken for about 50 minutes now, so we can just kind of come to the end of the conversation. But I want to talk about the next workshop. There's another three, right, that we're doing before the retreat.
Yes.
The next one coming up on the 25th of May is about building resilience.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can just, you know, without giving away too much.
Well, I think that resilience is one of the most important skills for an entrepreneur to have, because in order...
I can second.
Yeah, because in order to grow a business, you have to fall on your face a few times, you know. There is just... I don't think there is a way to do it without, you know. Maybe sometimes you get lucky for a while, but then at some point you're going to come to, you know, to a limit, and you're going to try things and fail. And you're going to learn a lot from that. And it's going to make you stronger in the end. But at that moment, it doesn't feel very good. So resilience is really the skill of being able to pick yourself up again, dust yourself off and go on. And it's not only about failure. It's also not maybe some you have a personal crisis, maybe you get sick, you know, things like that. Those things can completely throw us off as entrepreneurs. It can be really, really difficult to get back on track after something like that happens. And some people give up completely when they have like a personal crisis. They can't get back on track with their business because mm-hmm. they lose, you know, the kind of momentum.
Yeah.
And I think everyone who's had this happen to them, if you lose momentum for a few weeks, even it's quite significant in business. Yeah. And getting back into it, you know, and repairing the kind of damage that happened because we weren't responding to people and whatever, you know, in that time. It is challenging.
Yeah.
And also, you know, cash flow issues, which all entrepreneurs have at some point or another mm-hmm. in their career, you know, it's just part of, you know, being an entrepreneur, you know. It's also something that really takes some resilience to get over because you don't know how to pay your bills, you don't know how to pay your staff, you know.
It's the most stressful thing about being an entrepreneur.
It is a really, really stressful situation, but that all of these things, you know, having strategies to deal with that, strategies to deal with any kind of high stress, high pressure, anything that really throws us off course, is really, really helpful because it brings us back to, okay, I can do this. I just, you know, just put one foot in front of the other, keep going, keep going, keep going. And suddenly everything like takes, you know, suddenly you get momentum again and it keeps moving. But this phase of just knowing how to put one foot in front of the other when you actually feel like just lying down and laying dead, you know? You know what I mean, right?
I know. Maybe once or twice.
So, you know, this is really, really important. And the workshop is going to be about developing some strategies for yourself to help you get back on track.
Yeah. Keep build that stamina.
And get, you know, and the more practice you have, the less time it takes you to come back after any kind of setback, you know. So it's really, it's a matter of practice. It really is. It's like a muscle, you know. It's like your resilience muscle.
Yeah. A bit harder to train than the bicep.
Yeah, but if you train it in times when you don't really have a lot of problems, when it's maybe minor issues that you're dealing with, then when the big crisis hits, then you have all the strategies and the tools in place.
Yeah.
And when the big crisis hits, you really need them.
Yeah.
And you can't learn them then.
No.
Because, you know, you don't have any capacity for learning at that moment. Yeah. You know, you're just like...
crisis mode.
Yeah.
And while we're here, maybe you want to just say a little bit about the ones after the building resilience.
Yeah. So after the building resilience, we have two more workshops. I'm just trying to think in which order they come. And then, after there is one, I believe, on resourcefulness. And there's one about promoting
generating
your brand.
Ideas is the one.
Yeah, so the resourcefulness is the next one, right? And then
it's generating ideas and then there's promoting your brand ethically.
Exactly. So those are, again, two topics that are really important, especially for purpose-driven entrepreneurs because, you know, we need to be innovative. Things move so fast all the time, you know, around us. We need to constantly kind of recreate and innovate our ideas.
Sorry to interrupt, but it's also like we're kind of trying to create new business models.
Yeah.
So you're kind of, you know, testing things and you have to adapt pretty quick to see what's working, what's not.
Exactly. So, you know, innovation, creativity, resourcefulness, they all come kind of from the same place within. So it's creativity is not always about painting a picture, you know, or writing a piece of music. It's often just about finding a new solution to an old problem or managing a crisis in a good way. You know, this is also being creative. Or as you say, creating a new business model or just a new aspect in your business model, you know, just tweaking something to make it more effective. So that's the one Then the next one is about promoting yourself and your brand ethically, because in the very, very early stage of your business, you are your brand, basically, you know, and that only changes once you've established a brand that can then stand alone. But in the beginning, basically, there is no difference between you and your brand. People will come up to you, like people used to come up to me and say, "Hey, you are how women work, right?" I was like, "Yeah, I guess. I guess I am." because, you know, they don't differentiate between you and your brand. So this can be quite challenging at times because you kind of feel stripped of being your own person. You know, you have to kind of be representative of your brand all the time. You're kind of a public person in a way. Of course, you're not wildly famous necessarily, but, you know, people will recognize you.
I mean, on a small island like Malta, that's quite
significant. Yeah. And especially if you have, a job like what I used to do, I was on stage a lot. So, you know, if I'm on stage and I have 300 people in the audience, I don't know all these 300 people, but they all know me. And also when I'm in a cafe, like there might be 5 people there who recognize me. I don't know about it. I don't even know that there are people who recognize me, you know. So this was something I was constantly aware of, that, you know, people would know me and recognize me and associate everything I do with my brand and my initiative, you know.
So you can't walk into Starbucks naked.
I think in Qatar that wouldn't be an option anyway. But no, I mean, there were really things where I felt it could be challenging at times. But also, you know, the other part of that is also that marketing often kind of feels unethical. Now, I feel like a lot of the typical sort of marketing strategies and tricks that marketers use, they feel very unethical to me, because to me it feels like lying, you know, like saying, yeah, and creating this false sense of scarcity, for example, or, you know, that what marketers use a lot, these kind of strategies, you know. So I really had a difficult journey with marketing throughout until I realized that I'm really doing people a disservice because they're not finding out about the events in time to come to them. And if they're not finding out about the events, then, you know, how can they benefit from them?
Yeah.
So I needed to do marketing in order to serve the community that I wanted to serve. But I needed to find a way to do it that wouldn't go against my values, you know? So this for me became a journey and a learning about how to use storytelling, how to add value through my marketing so that I can feel good about it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's something I want to share and work on with people in that workshop. And then
I have to say, I really look forward to what you said, because I think it's really relevant for our time.
Yeah.
I think a lot of entrepreneurs, like I speak from personal experience, you don't, you know, start a business to sell. You start a business to provide a service. For example, you know, I started Grasshopper because of my own dietary changes. I wanted to bring this food to people. But then at the same time, to keep your business going, you have to kind of bring people to the place. And that can be exhausting and not really what you want to be doing.
Yeah.
And so I think finding a way to do that in a way that feels good and is actually inspiring you, I think is really crucial.
Yeah.
Especially in today's world, you know, social media has become such a rat race. It's just become, you know, information overload, content overload.
Yeah.
What about how many likes, how many followers? And it's kind of almost become very difficult to even realize who's honestly engaging with your brand and who you, like, it would be so much better to have 10 followers who are listening than 1,000 who are not listening or just liking and not really engaging with your content.
Yeah.
So I'm sure these are some of the things you're going to be going into, and I think it's going to be a very interesting one.
Yeah, I think it's also a lot about trust, you know, like trusting that the right people will connect, you know, if you give them a chance.
Yeah.
But I do need to make an effort from my side to give people a chance to find me, you know. If I'm quietly doing the greatest work in the world in my little corner without telling anyone, you know, it's not gonna work. So And finally, then we have the retreat.
Yeah. So it's called High on Impact.
Yes. So, yeah, because for me, you know, this is like the thing that I can really get high on is like if I feel that my work is having an impact, making an impact, you know, somehow serving to make the world a better place in one way or another. Whatever, however small that is, you know, but making some kind of difference. And in that retreat, I really want to also work with that power that connection has. So coming together with like-minded people, coming together with people who also get high on impact and on purpose, that alone for me is worth having the retreat for.
Yeah.
Now, I think that everyone who's ever experienced that, where you really come into a deep connection, where you're in a space of openness and sharing with other people who are very much like you and have, you know, the same kind of values that drive them, that alone is worth going for the retreat, you know, because it energizes you
it's
so
kind
much.
It's magic that happens on the retreat, you know, when you create these bonds and this space, and even just kind of stepping out of your daily routine.
Yeah.
And we're going to be doing some yoga and meditation as well in the retreat. So, we did a Sanya retreat last year, and it just blows me away every time, you know, what happens when people come together, especially when you're doing exercises to connect to each other in a more authentic way and kind of removing that fear and that boundary to really allow yourself to be yourself. And obviously, it's much easier when you're with like-minded people. So
exactly, because you don't have to fear that you're going to be strange, you know, because everyone is strange in the same way as you are. So they don't find you strange. Really, but we're going to do a lot more than that, you know. I'm just saying that for me, that alone
that's
is already worth it, you know, worth going. But we're going to be working more on finding more depth with the topics that we already worked on in the workshops. So it's good if people have attended the workshops, because it will allow them to go to the next level when they go to the retreat. But it's not, you know, absolutely mandatory.
Yeah.
We can do the retreat. You can do the retreat even if you haven't been to the workshops. And then it's also about, you know, thinking about some of the other aspects. Like you really need to create a community, a tribe, a network in order to be successful in your business. You know, you can't do it alone. So that's another aspect that we're really going to be looking at. Like, how do I connect with other people? How do I reach out to other people? How do I make this happen, that I feel like part of a community and get away from this idea of everyone out there is somehow out to compete with me or to steal my idea or whatever, but seeing the value in collaboration rather than competition. Like, I don't believe in competition anymore at all. I think even if someone's offering the exact same service that I am offering, we can work together and we can both become better. And grow more through doing this together. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't need to compete. We can collaborate always. There is always enough for everyone.
Yeah.
You know? And, and I really want to, you know, go into those kind of things during the retreat and help people really bring out that purpose that drives them, help them connect to it and translate it into something that becomes marketable. Even if they're already running their business or have been for a while, this can still be so valuable to reconnect in that case to the purpose and bring it back, you know, because we often lose parts of it or even all of it, you know, when we get kind of carried away with business.
Swept into the tide of the daily to-do lists.
Yeah, and then it's often a matter of necessity. You know, people go like, oh, but I need to earn money, so I'm just going to take this job even though it goes against my values and, you know, those kind of things. So also finding that trust again, you know, finding that trust that I'm going to be okay, even if I make some difficult choices, you know, I'm going to be more than okay. I'm going to do great. I'm going to thrive. It's not always going to feel like that at that very moment when I'm making the decision, But in the long run, I will see that if I stick to my values and to my purpose, that I will thrive in a way that is much more gratifying.
Yes, there's so many stories of entrepreneurs as well who kind of just stuck with the vision and had to go through, like, you know, being kicked out of their apartments, like not making their payments, but then, you know, just at the last minute they get they get saved and actually create like huge success by just, you know, sticking through that vision.
Yeah.
So maybe we can just end by kind of saying who would benefit from this strategy. I mean, is this just for social entrepreneurs? Is it just for startups? Or is it more broad than that?
I would say anyone who is driven by a purpose or wants to be driven by a purpose can benefit from the retreat. So it's really about this, you know, reconnecting to this purpose, rediscovering the purpose that you have that drives you and your own, your own potential to make that happen. Because, you know, I believe that we are all perfectly equipped to fulfill our purpose. So if I can connect to my purpose, then I can also connect to my, you know, skills and talents and potential to actually fulfill that purpose. So
I read in this book, one of my favorite books called Minding Your Business, and the author says that you are the CEO of I Inc. You are the CEO of your own body. You have these resources, you know, you've got a potential outfit, like how are you going to maximize yourself, you know, to achieve what you want? So I think definitely, you know, after attending your first workshop, I was seeing a lot of my friends who are not entrepreneurs, because I think we can all benefit from really just asking these important, meaningful questions and trying to see what's within us that we need to offer the world. Another favorite quote of mine from this book is that, paraphrasing, sort of, if we're going to face the crisis in the world at the moment, not only must everything we do change, but each and every one of us must change, you know, from within ourselves. And, you know, it's actually the most fun thing to be doing things that are helping you grow, helping you transform and become a different person.
Definitely.
So, amen. So, Carolyn, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Thank you.
Share the wisdom, you know, from that first workshop. I've been telling everyone that I see about it.
Great.
So I hope it inspires some more people to come check out your work, because I think a lot of people can benefit. And obviously the jewel in the crown is the retreat in July. For anyone listening, if you want to know more about the workshops or the retreat, you can either check out the Sanya event page or the dosomethinggood.eu event page. I think all the information is all of those. And if you have any questions for Carolyn, I guess you can contact through either of those pages. Or just leave a comment in the event and she'll answer any of your questions.
Yeah, like all the events are on Facebook, on the Do Something Good page on Facebook as well. So if you prefer Facebook, just get in touch through that. It's fine. We can get back to you through that as well.
Super. I always end the podcast by asking my guests, sort of, if there was one thing that you would want to share with people to have them live, you know, happier, more fulfilled life, what would it be? It's a bit of a big question, but, you know, anything that comes to mind that you'd like to share.
I think that at the end of the day, it's all about joy, you know, and remember that, because we tend to go like very, very big detours in order to get more joy into our lives, you know, and I don't mean pleasure, I mean joy. It's a very different thing, you know, it's much deeper, much more fulfilling. And we can have joy in our lives right now. At any moment, no matter what is happening right now, you know, we can always have joy in our lives right now. So instead of, you know, just looking ahead and trying to do something so that in 20 years time I can experience joy, think about now and think about how you can experience joy right now and create joy for others right now as well.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Carolyn.
Thank you.
See you in the next workshop.
Definitely.